Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This morning I'm going to talk to a colleague, one Chris Hutting, who heads up the Center for Risk Analysis, because he has just been to Washington. And given the furore of around a myriad of things that have come out of the United States under the new Trump administration, I thought we'd get this inside look of Chris's view of what is happening in Washington, and what the feeling is about South Africa and our various issues, shall we say. And I suppose by issues, I mean negative behavior largely on the part of the government. Chris Hutting, welcome. And why did Mr. Hutting go to Washington?
Good morning, Sarah. Good morning to the listeners. Always a pleasure to get to talk to you, and especially at this point in time, at a turbulent moment in Washington and across the world. It does bring a lot of opportunity, but also lots of uncertainty. So that was part of the reason, was to go and knowledge gather, meet with potential, with current contacts and potential contacts. Unfortunately, I was not part of a previous delegation that went to Washington, so I didn't meet with anyone in the administration. But I think it was overall worthwhile just to get a read of the temperature amongst the U.S. consumers, U.S. businesses about this new administration, but then also what, if anything, they think of the relationship with South Africa.
Well, let's start with your impressions, particularly from the business sector, which is significant. I think we've heard relatively little from them on how knowledgeable they were about South Africa, and if what their concerns are. Is there anything they think is worth pursuing in South Africa given the current climate?
So from a sentiment point of view, there's definitely still positivity towards South Africa, but it is a case of having learned over a couple of years now that doing business in South Africa is quite difficult. So it's not just in the last 6 months or the last year, things like the Expropriation Act or NHI. It's about longer term structural issues in the economy, policies, ideologies, legislation that makes doing business, not only for local businesses, but for international businesses, more difficult. So they realize there's a lot of potential, there's a lot of upside, but that comes with a higher risk premium in terms of doing business in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So I think there is an element of, we want to see how the GNU is functioning. I mean, when I was there, obviously conversations around the budget, which could now be coming to a head today or tomorrow. Let's see if there's an agreement or not. So basic governance issues that they ask questions about, are South Africa's institutions fit for purpose, etc. But I think there's a lot of capital that wants to be deployed in South Africa, not only from the US, but elsewhere. Mm. But again, it's a question of when you've got yet another barrier to growth, yet another issue, like I mentioned, the Expropriation Act, it makes that investment case just more difficult. So they're aware of some of the issues. Some of them, I think, are still a bit naive, where they think, well, let's just get the right person in charge of the ANC, for example, and everything will be fixed. The courts will make sure that expropriation is done responsibly. That they put it down to people and not to ideology and institutions. But I think slowly but surely, more and more of them are realizing there needs to be deep reforms before they themselves can invest on a serious level in South Africa.
So do they see South Africa, if we take all of those negatives out of the equation, from a point of view of opportunities or whatever it is we have to offer in this country, do they see South Africa in a favorable light nonetheless?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I mean, given relatively our developed infrastructure, not that it's always maintained or taken care of, but our infrastructure stock, given our links with the rest of the continent, given our logistics network, which again isn't maintained, but the stock is there relative to even our neighboring countries like Namibia and Mozambique, which are doing better, but they're still not at South Africa's level, given our well-developed financial markets, and given how businesses in South Africa are maybe a test case of how you do business in a in a difficult, if I can put it diplomatically, operating environment, they do realize that the upside potential is very strong. If you take also into consideration how much South Africa's population is forecast to grow over the next 50 to 100 years, and indeed the rest of the subcontinent, sub-Saharan Africa, there's going to be a lot of consumer demand and an aspirational middle class. So if one can come in as a business in manufacturing, construction, agriculture, just consumer goods, there could be a lot of purchasing power. But again, that means you need higher growth rates because you need a middle class that can actually purchase things. Yeah. So I think they realize that upside potential.
I think one of the astonishing things that always comes to mind is just how significant poor government policy choices are. And I'm thinking, I read a report a couple of days ago about further investment into the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, the Congo obviously has riches of extraordinary mineral riches, but given how desperate the country is from both, particularly from a civil war point of view, I mean, this country has been under war for decades and millions and millions of people have died. We've recently had the case of South African soldiers effectively being overrun by much better trained rebels in the Eastern Congo. Obviously, businesses will put up with a lot of challenges, shall we say, but bad government policy, as far as for business is concerned, is not one of those things. Is that really the make or break as to whether businesses will in fact invest in a place?
I think it's an important factor in that, but it's also, I mean, sentiment and I've been using this word a lot recently, sentiment and vibes, where you shouldn't make investment decisions based on vibes. But if you see markets reacting negatively, that almost, I think it is Warren Buffett who's mentioned this, that perception becomes reality. So if a narrative takes hold, whether it's positive or negative, then you as a business start to question maybe your own investment decisions in a given country. And you say, are other people seeing something that I'm missing, for example? So that sort of work to change that perception is, I think, very much long-term. It requires difficult concessions and acknowledgement that maybe the policies and legislation you've put in place as a government aren't fit for purpose. Now that requires stepping out of people's ideological bubbles, etc. I mean, I think that's partly why the ANC specifically has found it so difficult in some ways, where they see themselves still as this moral superpower in foreign policy, because they've driven things domestically so far down into the ground. So they see it as a bit of a refuge where they can still reside in the ideology. I should also mention, I think it is just about seeing the reality in terms of things like GDP per capita, economic growth rates, service delivery in terms of water, electricity. So when the sentiment around policy and ideology is negative, and then in reality you see the effects of that, then I think it's easier for businesses to make the connection and to say, look, it's not just about policy, it's about how the effect that it actually has on businesses in South Africa, for example.
And what do you say is really the effect of the Trump administration's position on putting America first? Much has been said in the local media about the sort of navel-gazing nature of this, and it's intended to sort of shut people out. I don't think you hold the same view.
Yeah, so I don't think America first, as it's being applied, or how they envision it at least, it necessarily means America alone. So they want to put the administration, people close to President Trump, they want to put American interests at the forefront, but they realize, I think they're steeling themselves for a longer-term battle with a country like China. They don't see Russia, for example, as big a threat to some other countries, and they want some of their allies and partners that will hopefully continue to be so. I mean, we can ask about whether their methods are going to result in what they want, but they want people, entities like the European Union, maybe like countries in sub-Saharan Africa, countries in Southeast Asia like Japan, South Korea. They want them to take active roles in their regions because they're going to focus on China, maybe some elements of Russia, but then they want other countries to be active role players for security, for economic growth in their region. So it's not like they're going to isolate themselves completely from the world. I don't think either among Republicans or Democrats there's really that sort of position. But they're going about things in a way where they challenge other countries to say, either you guys step up to the plate or we're going to partner with someone else in your region. So I know it, it doesn't always feel like that from a South African perspective, but we should in a way feel good about the intense focus that has been applied on South Africa, because it is important to the US in that way. It's important to US geostrategic interests in the region. It's important to global trade flows. There could be lots of upside potential for investment and growth, but they're laying down the gauntlet for South Africa and the South African government. Maybe they also think it's a new GNU now. Others can challenge the ANC on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're bringing this intense focus on South Africa.
I mean, the you've echoed the view that if South Africa, if the government were to send a delegation to Washington to explain itself and explain its policy, its foreign policy, and the fact that the Trump administration has withdrawn large amounts of aid that we've relied on, particularly in the scientific and health sciences, and that please, you know, keep us in the African Growth and Opportunity Act participation, they may as well not bother going. What America really wants to see is South Africa saying, this is what we can offer, this is what we can do in return, this is how we welcome you, this is how we can make things much easier for you to operate, and essentially like any self-respecting government that has its own interests at heart when it goes into foreign relations ventures.
Yeah, I very, very strongly agree with and endorse that position. For President Trump and I think others close to him, they want trade deals and other deals that also make them look good, and where they can say, look, these were our concerns and what are you bringing to the table? Are you realizing this? Or are you coming to us with, like I mentioned earlier, the sort of moral superpower perspective where you're trying to condemn us in different ways, but also you still want trade from us, but also you want investment. That's not, it's really not going to fly anymore. I think if there are two words to keep in mind, it's an era of real politics above moral politics. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't try and propose or put forward your own values as a sovereign country. But part of that is other countries can then choose to engage with you or not based on their values. So they're also sovereign countries and they can do so. I think if South Africa can go and not try and relitigate or focus on past issues, on former Ambassador Rasool and other matters, but can go with saying, here's a bilateral trade agreement, or we're negotiating on behalf of SADC, or these are the reforms we've made, not that we promised to make, but the reforms we've made to the Expropriation Act, to BEE legislation that makes it easier for our own businesses to operate, because that's to South Africa's benefit. It's not just doing it pragmatically because you want investment from the US in South Africa's auto manufacturing sector. It's because it's the best for the country. To make those sorts of arguments, then also, I mean, this is going to be difficult in light of the recent developments in the last 2 days, but I think if South Africa talks along lines of military or intelligence sharing, capacity building for a US security interest point of view, that could be quite important, because of course AGOA, one of the requirements for eligibility is that you don't undermine US national security interests, which they've accused of South Africa of and been concerned about. The easiest win for South Africa from an optics point of view is either lowering the megaphone or retracting the case against Israel at the ICJ. Now, I don't think the ANC, maybe morally, they'll do that sort of thing. That's going to be, they will see that as humiliating for them. But if you're going to put the country first, and we're talking about America first, if you talk about putting South Africa first, you've got to make some of these decisions as the biggest party in the country.
I think the problem is that we're at such a low ebb in terms of what ANC policy has wrought on this country, that one of the I suppose there are two related underlying problems. The one is being wedded to, I don't know, let's call it ideology, but I'm not even sure if it deserves that appellation anymore, that is archaic and out of touch, and it very much harks back to the struggle era. On the one hand, and the fact that in the whole process of the last 30 years, if there's one thing the ANC can tout and just look foolish at doing so, is that it has a certain morality, that it must trump it as a foreign policy ideal, and it's really just it's meaningless. It's worse than meaningless. It's actually hypocritical. So, you know, it's almost horribly simple as to what we need to do to get it right. But I don't know. Does the ANC not have to take quite a bit of a bruising in its relationship with the GNU for there to be any hope that what is needed will start to happen?
I think that's probably where they will. That's what they'll think about this. Instead of thinking about it in terms of, we're the biggest party in the country, this is our proud history, we always realize what's best for the country, and in that way, then open up to some of the more difficult conversations. It's the, for me, it's the same thing about thinking about the Trump administration. For many people, it's upending global norms, and for many, especially in Europe, they're struggling to deal with this because they see it as very boorish and, you know, sort of base-lowering debate and discussion. But it's not realizing that here's an opportunity to upend a lot of status quos that existed beforehand, which could be to the betterment of many countries and many economies. So, for the ANC, I think there will be internal debates and discussions about, no, we need to continue on this line, or maybe here's something. Let's talk about it. Let's game it out. Let's do scenario planning or something. So maybe I'm hoping for too much in that regard, as the hopium or the copium operating there. But if the party itself wants to survive going forward, they also need to realize it's a different kind of dispensation. Now, we're seeing it with the budget at the moment, where I think many of them psychologically and emotionally still haven't accepted that it's now a 39% party, and they still want to run things as a sole majority party. But that's not going to be reality. So the longer they postpone it and try and wish that reality was different, the more pain for them ultimately.
I just want to float an idea, because, you know, you're watching South Africa, and I mean, we've got a bit of a chutzpah in sort of making out that we're bigger and more important than we are, and this is part of our problem, is a sort of arrogance, a complete lack of humility. Whereas bigger, more powerful countries than us, say, let's use a good example in India, know how to adapt their foreign policy sort of on both poles of the global foreign policy world. So it could be China and other countries to the east, it's America to the west, and they don't diminish their standing in any way whatsoever. And if anything, they become an attractive option, obviously being a very large market as well. But perhaps one has to try and get into the conversation that, you know, the ANC is sort of cleaving to the Chinese communist ideals, but in fact it was the very preparedness to be pragmatic and to be part of the world and to essentially open up to America from the initiative, from Nixon's initiative, that has now led to China being, and with great concern to America, ahead of it in much of what matters in the global future, and that's particularly technology. And it's also, just add to that the point you make about the areas that the US would be interested in. It strikes me that the areas in South Africa that the USA would be interested in dealing with are much wider, the industries are much wider than the areas that the China have shown interest in. One gets the impression with China that they tend to invest in certain very much sort of self-rewarding areas, but not necessarily across, say, tourism, agriculture, etc. It tends to be infrastructural or mineral.
Yeah, and on that, I mean, given that South Africa is one of, if not the still most developed economy on the continent, and a big part of the Africa continent is a free trade area. If you talk about long-term development of markets and interests for the US, Africa should really be, along with India maybe, the top priority in terms of a growth region.
Right.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy. There's lots of just basic structural barriers, like you need roads, you need ports to work, you need permitting to be easy to understand, all that sort of thing. But I think you're right to highlight just the ANC has done some of this in the past. They just don't want to admit it to themselves. Maybe they really are clinging to this. It is a bit of an effect of rallying around the flag, where you've got someone attacking you now. You're struggling domestically, so you can find, you know, an outside target to blame instead of taking responsibility from the perspective of what you can control.
Just to sort of throw into the mix, we do have to replace our ambassador, and contrary to what the Daily Friend said this 1st April, it's not going to be Carl Niehaus. Can the relationship diplomatically be rescued? I mean, the South African diplomacy in the last 30 years has generally been pretty mediocre at best, and even to the big capitals like Washington. So what do we need? What sort of elements of personality and knowledge and experience do you think we need to send from an ambassadorial point of view?
Yeah, I think it'll need to be someone who is quite pragmatically minded, who realizes that it's not going to help to go and talk in Washington about things like, you know, Trump is leading a white cult and all that sort of moral language. You need to be willing to listen. And even when you're in the room, maybe like Ukrainian President Zelensky, go in with knowing this is how they operate. This is their style. It doesn't help pretending otherwise. And you have to deal with that. That doesn't mean you don't put forward your values, but maybe then you do it when the cameras are off. And when the cameras are on, you do it differently. And I also think, just regardless of who we might send, it's important just to go back to diplomatic basics. So make sure the embassy is fit for purpose, make sure it works, et cetera, et cetera. Then regardless of whether that ambassador works or not, you're building more structures, more long-term elements. So work with, do briefings, meet with Republicans and Democrats, all that sort of stuff. It's unfortunately, for whoever it is, going to require a lot of legwork, and South Africa with its foreign policy hasn't liked doing difficult work. We like the big ceremonies where we can make grand moral pronouncements at the G20 and for the Global South and whatever, but that's not going to fly anymore. And I also, just the last point, I think the ANC and South Africa shouldn't think that in 4 years' time, if a Democrat president is elected, that this is going to change. I think both parties in the US want to put some more US domestic matters first, and that means to get onto their radar in a positive manner, you're going to need to play a more pragmatic game.
Chris Hutting, I'm very glad you went to Washington. Thank you for joining us.